you won't yell. Not one more sound or I'll...
You'll kill me.
No, I never killed anyone. I'm not that kind of person.
Junk Food Dinner, Episode 61. This week, aliens invade the Earth, turning humans into zombies, and it's up to Japanese rockers Guitar Wolf to save the day in Wild Zero from 2000. Then a teenage boy hides in a secret room after the accidental murder of a young girl in the 1974 made-for-TV movie Bad Ronald. And finally, the kidnapping of a teenage heiress goes awry, causing tension between the kidnappers in the 1973 exploitation flick The Candy Snatchers.
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, Episode 61. This is the podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television looking for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. We're not professional film journalists or critics by any means. We are simply three geeks from Ohio with entirely too much time on our hands. In Ohio, I am Kevin Moss, and I'm joined by my co-host Mark Fredo in New York and Parker Bowman in California. Every week, we'll each bring a cult favorite to the table, recalling our personal experiences with the film, discussing its merits, and arguing why we did or did not enjoy it. This week, we'll be taking a look at Wild Zero from 2000, then Bad Ronald from 1974, and finally The Candy Snatchers from 1973. But first, gentlemen, how you doing this week?
Doing all right.
Yeah, how was your Memorial Day weekends?
All right. I had a hamburger. That's basically all the more stuff I did to celebrate.
That's pretty damn American.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty good hamburger.
Yeah?
I didn't eat it outside.
Oh.
Yeah, I just ate it inside.
You're an indoor kid.
Yeah, I guess I'm not very patriotic.
Mark, how about yourself?
It was fine. I didn't really do anything terribly exciting.
You guys are a disgrace to America.
Well, yeah.
When 4th of July rolls around, you guys better have some fucking stories.
Yeah. I went to Coney Island last Thursday, but it was like really, really cold.
Yeah.
and foggy.
Did you sing Coney Island Baby?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. I did eat some French fries and drink a bunch of expensive cheap beer.
Did you play that chicken in a game of tic-tac-toe?
I did not, no.
Oh. You're not very patriotic either.
Yeah, no, I'm not. But yeah, that was it. I went to like a little cookout thing last night when we decided we weren't doing the show till today. I was like, oh, cool. I guess I'll go to this barbecue.
You're
welcome.
Yeah,
that was pretty much it. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Yeah. Well, what did you do, Captain America?
I really have no room to talk either. I didn't do much. Three nights in a row, I threatened to take my girlfriend to see Mad Max at the drive-in at 2 in the morning, but I could never build up the energy to do it. Like, 1 o'clock would roll around, I'd be like, fuck, I'm not going to the drive-in. But I miss Mad Max on the drive-in on Memorial Day, so I feel pretty let down with myself. But I still had fun, relaxed, enjoyed the nice weather.
Just like our forefathers did.
That's right.
Was it actual Mad Max, or was it the Road Warrior?
Oh, it was actual Mad Max.
That's you should have probably saw that.
I know. And the drive-in is the perfect place to see it. But like I said, it was the third movie of a triple feature. It didn't start till 2 a.m. And this drive-in is way the fuck out in the boondocks. So like, I'd be getting home at 5 a.m. And
what were the other two movies?
The Pirates of the Caribbean and Fast Five.
Oh.
That's a very weird triple feature.
Yeah, well, I think they figured, you know, get the kids in first, then have the teenagers stick around, and then by the time Mad Max comes on, it's just the weirdos. And I wish I would have been one of those weirdos, but alas, it wasn't to be.
You just hate America so much.
Well, it's an Australian film, so boycotting it, I was kind of being patriotic.
Yeah, I guess so.
speaking of Australians, let's get into some listener feedback. The first piece of listener feedback comes to us all the way from Australia. This is from a gentleman named Andrew. He says, "Greetings from Australia. Just went through the Howard the Duck experience with your show. You guys had to do the show. Not sure why I subjected myself to the movie again. I think that duck has a strange allure enough for human women to want to get it on with him. Hope you do more feature commentary episodes again. Rocky Four or Frogtown, maybe. Keep up the great work and keep an eye out for Jeffrey Jones. Cheers, Andrew. So thank you. I'm always keeping an eye out for Jeffrey Jones, although because I'm not a young boy anymore.
Yeah, you're not.
I think I'm safe.
8 years old.
Right. But yeah, he is one scary dude. But yeah, we definitely want to do more commentaries in the future. I think that was a lot of fun doing that. Well, it was fun doing the commentary. Watching Howard the Duck, not so much. But
yeah, less fun.
Right. So we'll definitely do more of those in the future. And yeah, we appreciate, Jesus Christ, someone listening on the complete other side of the globe. That's wacky to me. But yeah, thank you so much for tuning in and enjoying the show. We also got a voicemail here from a gentleman who didn't leave his name. So this is a voicemail from the unknown listener.
Well, hello, guys. I love your show, and I think that you guys are really punishing yourselves. In the last couple of shows, specifically the franchises in space, man, you guys suddenly got beat down. Look, I love your show, and I really love just the idea of staying in the realm of the past instead of having to, you know, force yourself to watch something present day that is probably going to suck. But I will say that, you know, you probably have tons of recommendations, but I just got to say that Terror Firmer by Troma, directed by Lloyd Kaufman. I don't know if you guys have ever reviewed that movie, but there's something about that movie that besides all the gore and, you know, retarded humor, it just comes across as a very interesting story about making a movie. I mean, there is something else there besides the shock and the bullshit, but I just wonder if you had anything to say about that. And also, last thing is that, real quickly, I saw a movie called The Burning Moon. It's a German movie, and it's told in a series of vignettes, like Tales from the Crypt. But the last one, this priest gets killed for molesting children, and he gets sent to hell. And it is the most horrific portrayal of hell I've ever seen. And I've asked other guys about this, and nobody's really given me a good response. But movie-wise, what is the most horrific portrayal of hell you've ever seen? All right. You guys have a great, great show. I love you guys. Bye.
Thank you for the voicemail, unknown listener. Yeah, I have never seen Terror Firmer. Have you guys ever seen that, the Troma film?
I have.
Yeah, like, it's good.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Sweet. And The Burning Moon.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, I like anthology films, and
absolutely.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. German or not? but yeah, so what would you guys say? What's the most horrific portrayal of hell that you've ever seen in a movie? Certainly wasn't Highway to Hell.
No.
That we watched on the show. Considering that movie's portrayal of hell was simply the Arizona desert, which.
Yeah. Yeah,
could be worse. I'd say the most horrific portrayal of Satan I've ever seen is probably in that movie Legend with Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah.
That Satan is scary. Isn't that Tim Curry?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's frightening. Yeah.
And those monster horns?
Yeah. And like that boogeyman dude who also hangs out in that movie. Man, that movie's scary.
Yeah, I'd say that might rank up there.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen like a real scary hell. I think all the movies I watch that take place in hell or are about hell are like goofy and stuff. Like,
what about
the only one
Stay
that really...
Tuned?
Yeah. I guess that's pretty scary.
More Jeffrey Jones.
Right.
what were you going to say, Parker? Sorry.
Oh, nothing. I think, like, the most horrific one that comes to mind is Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Oh, yeah.
That's
that Easter
Battleship.
Yeah, and that Easter Bunny was kind of scary.
Oh, totally.
There's a cool Japanese movie called Jigoku.
Oh, right. I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, that has, I mean, it's not really scary, but it is very cool.
Yeah, I bet the Japanese do hell pretty well.
Yeah.
I have to venture there's some pretty good depictions of hell in Japanese cinema. But yeah, thanks again for the voicemail. The next email we have is from a listener named Jason. He says, hey guys, I just wanted to say, love the show, found it thanks to Kissing Contest, discovered tons of great movies, and rewatched some awesome ones thanks to you. So glad you do this every week. It's perfect. Just one thing, don't worry about spoiling scenes or from whatever movie you guys are talking about. That kills me when reviews do that. Who cares? A good movie is still going to be good, or it should be, even if you know that stupid kid sees dead people. If I care or someone else does for that that much, they should just fast forward. So thank you, Jason. Thanks for listening to the show, and thank you, Kissing Contest, for turning people on to us.
For turning people on.
Yeah, you turn me on every week, and now you're turning people on to our podcast. What can't you do? But yeah,
they're probably the most erotic of the movie podcasts.
That's for sure. But yeah. We try not to spoil the movie, at least in terms of the ending. I don't know. I for one don't want to know everything that's going to happen in a movie, because if I'm enticed by a movie, like in a review or a podcast, you know, I like to have some ambiguity going into it. But I can understand how it wouldn't be a big deal for some people, but some people it is a big deal for. So just trying to keep everyone's feelings in mind.
We're feeling oriented.
Absolutely. The next piece of listener feedback that we got is from a gentleman named Seth. He says, my name is Seth. I'm from Dallas, Texas, and I love your podcast. I've known about it for a while because I always notice links to your site from the IMDb discussion boards, but I never really took the time to listen until recently. I have to say you guys are doing a great thing. I download your podcast and listen to them while I'm doing my nighttime job delivering pizza, and it makes the time fly by. I think you guys are very funny, but also informative and intelligent when you want to be. I have been into obscure, cult, etc. movies since I was a kid, but movies I like are the kinds that generally get bashed by critics, so it really makes me happy to hear reviews from normal people that enjoy movies for the same reasons I do, and for that, I thank you. Don't Go Into the House and Night Beast are two of my favorite movies, but aren't really cult classics, so I was really excited to see that you guys reviewed them. It's obvious that you take the time to seek out not only cult favorites, but also movies that many people hadn't heard of. I know I've discovered many new movies through your podcast that I'm excited to check out. I feel like I should recommend some movies to you guys, but I'm sure you get requests from people wanting you to review the same ones, so I will dig deep into my collection and see if I can find any that you maybe haven't heard of or seen. One of my favorite subgenres is sci-fi horror, which would be a cool theme for a podcast. But here are a few I'm fond of. He likes Contamination, which is a cool Italian splatter flick about alien bacteria that makes people's chest explode. It was a video nasty, so it's pretty well known, I guess. The Dark. This is a movie that gets a lot of bad credit because Tobe Hooper started directing then quit halfway through. But still, not a bad movie by any means. It has a good cast, and the alien is really cool. He has laser vision. Saturn 3 is one of my favorites. I remember seeing it on Sci-Fi Channel when I was little, and it scared the shit out of me and left me scarred for life. Now it's pretty cheesy, but it's still somewhat really creepy. There's still something really creepy about it. It stars Harvey Keitel, Kirk Douglas, and Farrah Fawcett, who is at her hottest. You see her tits! This one also has a really cool bad guy. A couple of other movies I would like to hear you guys review are Beyond the Darkness, which is totally outrageous exploitation flick about a guy who keeps his dead girlfriend's corpse around his home. It's charming. Tombs of the Blind Dead. This is a pretty well-known one, but it actually has a big cult following. But I love it. It is one of my favorite movies. It is totally cheesy and has tons of ridiculous exploitation moments, but still manages to be super creepy and at times downright scary, which is why I love it so much. I would really like to hear your opinions on this one. Please keep doing what you guys are doing because I love it. I'm always looking forward to the next podcast because I can't wait to hear about the random movies you dig up. Thanks, Seth. Well, thank you so much, Seth, for the kind words and the recommendations. A lot of good recommendations in there. I've heard of Contamination. That actually played at Studio 35 not too long ago, and I wanted to check that out but didn't get a chance to. So I'll definitely be looking into that in the future. Have you guys seen any of these other ones that he recommended?
I have not. I'm not much into sci-fi. Unless Jason's there, so yeah. I don't know anything about sci-fi movies generally.
Right on. Yeah, that Tombs of the Blind Dead sounds pretty cool. We'll have to look into that as well, and maybe when we do our next round of listener appreciation shows, we'll get to one or two of those. So yeah, thank you, Seth, for listening and sending us that great list of recommendations. So if you would like to get in contact with us, please send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on our voicemail line at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Give us a call and leave us a message, and leave us your name too, so we don't have to call you the unknown caller. So with that being said, let's get into some nerd news.
From the global resources of Junk Food Dinner Worldwide, it's time for Nerd News.
All right, so the first piece of nerd news that I have this week, a sad piece of nerd news, isn't it always the case? Jeff Conaway, the actor, best known for his roles in Grease and the TV show Taxi, died this week after being taken off of life support. He was discovered unresponsive on May 11th, and he had an overdose of painkillers, likely the culprit, and later passed away after being taken off life support. He most recently was featured on Celebrity Rehab, the Dr. Drew TV show. He once told Howard Stern that he had tried to commit suicide over 20 times and had never succeeded. So he obviously had his bouts with depression and drug abuse. So it was sad to see him go. He was, I think, Kinnicky in Grease. And yeah, so, you know, not a superstar by any means, but nevertheless an interesting character actor. So see you later, Jeff Conaway. Try to stay away from those pills in heaven.
Heaven has all the best drugs, though.
That's true.
Yeah. And there are no side effects in heaven.
That's good.
Yeah, this is sad because now he's not going to be on any more Dr. Drew shows, which I watch quite a bit. So that's like basically all I know this dude from, but he's very good on those.
Yeah, well, some of his best work, I hear.
You got that right.
Next piece of nerd news that I have is it looks like Bill Nighy is going to be the futuristic rebel leader in the Total Recall remake. More news has been spilling out about this Total Recall remake. You know, I don't think with Arnold Schwarzenegger's recent controversies that he's going to be making a cameo in it, as some people were originally saying. But we know that it is still going to be starring Colin Farrell as Douglas Quaid. And it also will have John Cho from Harold and Kumar. He's going to play McClane, a smooth-talking rep from the mind-messing company that tempts Douglas Quaid to implant fantastic memories into his brain. We also got Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad, and Ethan Hawke will also have small roles in the movie. Also, Kate Beckinsale and Jessica Biel. So it looking like it's going to be a pretty all-star cast. As we reported in previous Nerd News, is they are not going to Mars this time around. They're actually going to keep it more true to the novel. And so it'll be interesting to see how it compares to the original Arnold Schwarzenegger film, which I'm a big fan of. So if it's half as fun and half as cool, I will I'll probably go see it in the theater.
Yeah, I'll see anything with Breaking Bad in it. That guy's awesome.
Is that what you call him?
Yeah, that's what I call him.
He's upgraded from Dad from Malcolm in the Middle that you used to call him a couple years ago.
Yeah, now it's just Breaking Bad. Whenever I watch that show, I'm just like, come on, Breaking Bad. Your wife is a bitch. Let's do something about this.
Right.
She really is the worst.
She's awful.
Nah, her sister's pretty bad, too. Oh, anyway. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm not going to see this.
Come on.
Nope.
It's got John Cho, your favorite.
Yeah. I do love John Cho. No, I have no real beef with John Cho.
Good. In other casting news, it looks like Matthew Modine has been brought on for Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight. It looks like Modine will be playing a character called Nixon. Not too much has been revealed on what his role will be in the film, but it looks like he will be, in fact, in The Dark Knight. Some of the other cast members that have just been announced, Tom Conti and Joey King. Yeah, so it's looking to be a pretty all-star cast. Of course, we got Christian Bale, Morgan Freeman, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Gary Oldman, Michael Caine, Anne Hathaway, and Juno Temple. It's going to be coming out on July 20th of next year, so we've got over a year before this thing actually hits the screen. But it looks like it's going to be a pretty tight cast. And, I'm looking to see Joker from Full Metal Jacket in there, Matthew Modine. No, sorry, I just realized how confusing that could have been. Because we're talking about Batman. But you see, Matthew Modine played a character called Joker in Full Metal Jacket. Okay. Anyway.
Oh, man. It's a rich tapestry.
Yes. But, I'm pretty psyched about this.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this.
What?
I mean, not excited.
Yeah. Now you're excited about Batman movies?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Yeah, I like these new Batman movies. It's going to be good.
Well, it looks like tragedy keeps striking the set of The Hobbit. I think it's just God's way of saying, quit making this movie, Peter Jackson. We've reported in past Nerd News about all the debacles that have been going on with the continuous switching of directors. Then Peter Jackson's effects studio blew up. And now another explosion on The Hobbit set injures two crew members. According to the film's publicist, the men were drilling a statue when the accident occurred. Both production members suffered minor burns and were treated on the scene before being rushed to the hospital as a precaution. One of them had some burnt nostril hairs. Apparently, if that's the case, there were risks of inhalation, so they had to get checked out. I had to include the story, A, because the headline starts with the words Hobbit explosion, which just conjures up funny images in my head. And, like I said, I think this is a sign from God to just wrap it up on the Hobbit movie. It does not need to be made. But it is scheduled for a December 2012 release. So start saving your money now.
I will.
Yeah, I won't. I never read The Hobbit. And it's... Well, I mean, like, I saw the...
The animated one?
Yeah, I saw the animated one. And it was basically like Lord of the Rings without all the cool, like, fighting orcs. And the cool fighting orcs was the best part about Lord of the Rings. So I don't think I'll... You don't like orc fighting?
No, I love orc fighting.
Where's the
problem? But I also love that Hobbit. Hobbit.
I don't know much about him. He like had to hide in some barrels to get away or something. I don't know. I would have much rather him just man up and fight.
Yeah, I think all of it. Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, the whole deal. Not for me. Boring. Boring as all hell.
Except for when they're fighting orcs.
Even that. No, thank you.
I can't imagine that. I can't imagine a huge Helm's Deep battle and then you yawning during it. It's exciting.
Sorry.
All right, I'm coming over to your house. We're going to watch the Battle of Helm's Deep. And if you, I guarantee you, you'll be enthralled.
No. I refuse.
Parker's going to come all the way from California to watch this. All
right, fine.
He's going to refuse to do it.
We'll do something more fun, I promise.
Like watch the battle in the Mines of Moria? You think that one's better?
Yeah. All right.
We'll watch that.
All right, enough of this nerd talk. Oh, wait, this is the nerd news. Fuck. Still got a couple more stories. All right, so on with this nerd talk. So guess what they're making a prequel to? Finally, Frankenstein. Yes, sir.
The one story that does... Why would they do this? All right, I need to know more about this. What's going to happen here?
Yeah, there's a movie coming out called This Dark Endeavor, The Apprenticeship of Victor Frankenstein. The movie is based on an upcoming novel, the first in a series. Yeah, of course. But yeah, in this novel, Frankenstein's twin Conrad is gravely ill. His brother seeks out a mysterious old alchemist to help him produce the elixir of life, a serum that will bestow the gift of perpetual health. Yeah, so it's going to tell the backstory of Dr. Victor Frankenstein. Why this is necessary, I don't know. But Matt Reeves is attached to direct, making this his third potential project. He did the Let Me In one. He's doing the 8 o'clock in the morning, the They Live remake or whatever reimagining of the original source material. So Matt Reeves, not big on original ideas. But,
so it seems.
Yeah.
So. This is baffling. How can you make a Frankenstein movie without the monster in it?
Yeah.
Like, he's the story. Nobody gives a crap what happens before the monster was made.
Right. Yeah, it's a terrible idea on all accounts. Book, movie, whatever. Don't do it. And finally, we always like to end the nerd news, at least I do, with either some porno news or some wrestling news. So how about a little bit of both? Ex-WWE star Chyna is getting back into the porno game. You might remember 7 years ago, WWE superstar Chyna released a, some might say, horrific sex tape. And
guy's gross.
apparently, she's either hard up for cash or... just wants a little bit more attention. She's
hard up for something.
Yeah.
Know what I'm saying?
I got you. She's she's teaming up with Vivid Entertainment to release a movie called Backdoor into Chyna. This is starring her and Evan and Lee Stone, two of the most well-endowed male porn stars in the business today. So, yeah, it's probably going to be some, I don't know, some anal sex. And some pile drivers and some sleeper holds. So, if you're a fan of Chyna, and Parker, I know you are.
You got that right.
You're going to be checking this out?
I'm probably morbidly curious enough to check this out, sadly. It's going to be horrible, and it's probably going to give me nightmares, but I probably have to see it. I would not be a good wrestling fan if I didn't see it.
Yeah, that's a good way to justify it.
Yeah, and it's probably better than those John Cena movies.
Yeah. So,
there's that.
Yeah, I wish more wrestlers would get into porn.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. Mr. That... Perfect would have been a good porn star.
Yeah. I mean, they all look like porn stars anyway.
That's true.
I mean, Ravishing Rick Rude, are you kidding me? I think that dude was a porn star.
I think so.
Brutus the Barber Beefcake? Come on. If that's not a porno star, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Ultimate Warrior get into porn, too. He would probably be
that would be intense. He would.
I know.
He would kill a woman on the set.
He's so full of energy and life.
Yeah, and it all just shoots out of his penis.
Well, that about wraps it up for episode 61 of Junk Food.
All right. We're getting the hook from Mark, so we're going to move on to some cool stuff on DVD this week. The first DVD we have is Drive Angry from 2011, starring Nicolas Cage and the lovely Amber Heard, directed by Patrick Lussier. In the high-octane action-adventure Drive Angry, Nicolas Cage stars as an undead felon who breaks out of hell to avenge his murdered daughter and rescue her kidnapped baby from a band of cult-worshipping savages. God damn, that sentence alone, got me... super excited. So, this is one that I sadly missed in the theater. I begged and begged several people to go see this with me, and everyone was like, fuck you, dude. I'm not going to go see some 3D Nick Cage movie, pay $10. I couldn't sell anybody on it, but I really wanted to see this. So now that it's out on DVD, I'm going to have to check this out. In fact, I think we might be doing this on the show next week.
Indeed so. I also want to see this desperately, so... I'm glad that Junk Food Dinner came to our rescue and gives us a good excuse to watch this.
Yeah. See, if you guys, Parker, if you would have lived in the same state, we could have been watching this shit months ago.
Yeah, I know. I need to move back. That way I have an excuse to see movies.
Yeah.
Kevin Merriman was also on the begging everyone to see this platform, and we didn't see it. So now I'm going to watch it for the show.
Now you're forced to.
Yep. Thank you, Junk Food Dinner.
Next DVD we have is Kaboom, also from earlier this year. One of Parker's favorite directors, Greg Araki, brings us this hot comedy about the secrets that lie beneath the idyllic seaside town. Heading the cast of Gorgeous Guys and Girls is Thomas Decker from the Nightmare on Elm Street remake as Smith, an 18-year-old living the life of a college freshman, lusting after his straight roommate, played by Chris Zilka, hanging out with his lesbian bestie, Haley Bennett, and trying to decide if he can, whether he digs boys or girls. Teen angst soon gives way to more sinister concerns when Smith finds out that his small Southern California town is also the home to a killer cult. So more killer cults in this DVD section that you can shake a stick at. But yeah, I don't know. I can't say that I'm super excited to check this out, but being a Greg Araki film, I knew Parker would be bemused if I didn't have it in here, so.
Yeah, I didn't know that it was coming out so soon. I thought it was coming out like this fall or something, but it looks a lot like his older stuff, like Doom Generation and Nowhere, which will be fun, and I'm super stoked for this because I like that guy.
Yeah, how about that kid from Nightmare on Elm Street? How do you feel about him?
Wasn't that like the kid who went to jail and got killed in jail? Is that the guy who it is?
Beats me.
I think it is. I don't think it's that Joy Division kid. I think it's the other
okay.
kid.
Okay. Oh,
so,
good.
So I'm neutral on this kid rather than hating him.
Yeah, that's good. Next we have Passion Play from 2010. Now, I hadn't even heard of this fucking movie, but I had to put it on here just because of the weird cast it has. This is, according to the description, a terrific cast will hold you spellbound in this one-of-a-kind seductive thriller from the screenwriter of The Recruit. The last thing washed-up jazz musician Nate Poole, played by Mickey Rourke, wanted to do was betray sinister gangster Happy Shannon, played by Bill Murray, but it may be the last thing he does unless he can deliver Lily, Megan Fox, a beautiful and mysterious carnival sideshow attraction. The stakes can't get any higher for the two lovers as they try to elude the merciless killer who will stop at nothing to keep Lily for himself. I don't know. This is supposed to be a hard-boiled action drama in the tradition of classic film noir. And it's got Bill Murray as a murderous gangster. So that alone made me kind of interested to check this out. But the fact that I haven't heard anything about it kind of makes me suspicious of this, if this is worth seeing or not. Have you guys heard anything about this?
I have not.
But yeah, Bill Murray and Megan Fox. I never thought I'd see that pairing, unless it was in the Ghostbuster 3 or something like that. Next up on the DVDs, we've got Beautiful from 2010, starring Javier Bardem, directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu, and, you know, the guy who did Amores Perros, 21 Grams, and Babel. This is about Javier Bardem stars as Uxbal, a man on the wrong side of the law who struggles to provide for his children on the dangerous streets of Barcelona. Anyway, this is, you know, Academy Award-nominated stuff. Not too culty at all, but I liked this director's previous work. And so if you're feeling a little highfalutin, a little classy, maybe check this one out.
I saw this in the theater. It was not as good as, you know, Amores Perros or anything, but I still liked it.
Was it Beautiful?
Yes.
Well, if you're not feeling so classy, you can check out Cross from 2011, starring Brian Austin Green and Michael Clark Duncan. This is the movie for actors with three names. When beautiful young women start disappearing from the streets of L.A., it's time for good guy Callan, a.k.a. Cross, and his crew of weapons experts to kick into high gear and take out the trash. Granted incredible power by ancient Celtic Cross, Callan must fight to stop the immortal Viking from destroying mankind with his doomsday device. So it's got Brian Austin Green, that bratty-ass kid from 90210, Tom Sizemore, Jake Busey, and the aforementioned Michael Clark Duncan. So this is kind of like a Celtic-themed superhero movie, straight to video. Probably pretty lousy, but might be campy enough to have some cult appeal. So check it out at your own risk. Next on the DVD list, we have Prey. This is one night several deer inexplicably hurl themselves against the electric fence on a farm, discovering deep bites on the animals' bodies. The farmers and visiting family members who've gathered for a tense reunion penetrate deep into the surrounding forest. They carry guns, expecting to encounter a wild predators, but what they are bewildered to find is an environment ravaged by a mysterious evil force. And as the sun slowly sinks away, howling resounds throughout the forest. The hunters have become the prey. This modern-day horror film blends elements of The Descent, Jaws, and Deliverance into an original picture of human nature scarier than the darkest woods. So that sounded like a pretty interesting kind of newer horror movie. So, I don't know. You could probably do worse.
Yeah, I like when things hunt humans.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
Big fan of human hunting.
Yeah, and anytime the hunter becomes the prey, I'm also into that.
Yeah.
You a big Pac-Man fan, then?
Dude, totally.
We have a lot of good movies coming out on Blu-ray this week, making their Blu-ray debut. I'm just going to run through these real quick. We've got Once Upon a Time in the West from 1968, starring Henry Fonda and Jason Robards. This is an awesome Western. If you are big into 60s Westerns, which I am, this is one of the better ones. So definitely, if you haven't seen Once Upon a Time in the West and you have a Blu-ray player, check that out. We've also got the aforementioned Legend from 1985, starring Tim Curry and Tom Cruise. The Ultimate Edition, making its Blu-ray and DVD debut this week. So if you love scary Satans and you want the Ultimate Edition, and you have a little bit of extra cash to throw around, this is your week, brother. Also, we've got Clockwork Orange Anniversary Edition on Blu-ray and DVD this week. Another super special edition. This is, of course, starring Malcolm McDowell, directed by Stanley Kubrick, the adaptation of Anthony Burgess' classic novel. If you haven't seen this, pause the show. Go watch it. It's fun. Fun movie about rape and vandalism. Also, if you like Stanley Kubrick, also making its Blu-ray debut this week is Lolita, starring James Mason and Shelley Winters. This is the movie that made it cool to have sex with underage girls again. So, if you like that and you like Stanley Kubrick, check it out. Shelley Winters is not the underage girl in this movie, FYI. We also got American Graffiti Special Edition coming out on Blu-ray from 1973. This was directed by George Lucas and stars Richard Dreyfuss and Ron Howard. And also Mackenzie Phillips. Maybe while she was having sex with her dad? Who knows? Anyway, just thought I'd throw that out there. This is an awesome movie, though. I actually just watched this the other night, and it still holds up. Great film. Lots of good music in it, too. You guys like the American Graffiti?
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it.
Ah, you should check it out. If you like George Lucas when he's not making Star Wars or Howard the Duck movies.
I can't imagine that I would like him any less than those times.
Right. And then the last two Blu-rays we have is The Cat O' Nine Tales from 1971, directed by Dario Argento, gets the Blu-ray treatment this week. This is the film that they say out-psychoed Psycho, although I think that gets thrown around a lot for late 60s, early 70s horror films. But if you like the Argento stuff, you know, Bird with Crystal Plumage, Deep Red, this is probably definitely up your alley as well. You seen this, Mark?
Yes.
Worth it?
Absolutely.
Awesome. And lastly, we have A Man Called Horse from 1970. This is Richard Harris. This is a classic tale of Native Americans and their struggle. But, yeah, I don't know. In the 70s, Native Americans were everywhere, it seemed like. And this movie might have kicked off the trend. And then that crying Indian in the public service announcement just brought it home.
That guy was huge.
Yeah. So if you like your 70s, pop culture, Native Americans, Man Called Horse is your ticket to excitement this week on Blu-ray.
I was hoping that this movie would be the biopic about the basketball player who invented that game where you take a shot and then your friend takes the same shot.
Now that would be something. I would see that.
That would be a good movie.
And lastly, we have a TV series on Blu-ray on Blu-ray and DVD this week. We've got True Blood, the complete third season. Now, have you guys watched this show at all?
Yeah, I've watched a lot of this show.
Good.
I watched the first season.
Is it worth it?
If you stop watching it the first season, it might be worth it.
Okay.
It gets real bad.
I just know a lot of people that are really into this show, but all these people also happen to be females, so.
Yeah, that's why I watch so much of it. My wife's real into it.
Yeah.
But after the first season, I couldn't handle me any more True Blood. I gave up on it.
Yeah, I understand. But yeah, you know, I always make fun of them and, you know, make the Twilight jokes and everything. And they're always like, no, it's much better than that. It's very, very erotic and very violent. And so they kind of pique my interest. But then I'm like, wait a minute. You're all girls. I know how you think.
Yeah, I mean, it is more erotic and more violent than Twilight. But there's also like more.
But what isn't?
Yeah, what isn't? And there's also like a lot more like fairies and like immortal druid witches and stuff. So
yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing not selling me on this is this complete third season DVD. One of the special features is a music video by Snoop Dogg called "Oh Sookie," which apparently is a lead character.
That's Anna Paquin's character. I'm gonna go ahead and say that Snoop Dogg is too old to still be making music,
especially True Blood themed rap.
Yeah.
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 He is 32 years old. It's time for him to hang it up.
Yeah. Rap and punk rock are young men's games. Mm-hmm. You got to know when to bow out. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about 2000's Wild Zero, so stick around.
Rock and roll.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 61. The first movie we're going to be taking a look at tonight is Wild Zero from 2000. Now, this is a Japanese film directed by Tetsuro Takeuchi. Unfortunately, this gentleman has not directed very many things. He directed Wild Zero in 2000. 10 years later, he directed Florella, which I have heard nothing about. But nevertheless, Wild Zero is, in the 11 years since its release, gained quite a cult following among fans of, you know, cult cinema. We've got, it features prominently the Japanese garage punk band Guitar Wolf. But the story is mostly about a young man named Ace, who is kind of a devotee to the band Guitar Wolf. He sports the leather jacket, the pompadour, you know, the classic greaser 50s look. He rides a motorcycle, goes to their shows, falls in love with them, wants to be just like his heroes, Guitar Wolf. At a Guitar Wolf concert, he goes backstage only to hear the band in an argument with their very creepy manager, I guess, Captain, played by Makoto Inamiya. He wears very short shorts and a weird, like, page boy wig, and is just all around creepy and evil manager. Then Ace kind of saves them from Captain, and Guitar Wolf, the lead singer, gives him a magical flute, much like Super Mario, that he can blow on anytime that he's in trouble, and Guitar Wolf will come to his rescue. Well, wouldn't you know it, Ace needs to use that whistle sooner than he thinks, as a series of flying saucers have invaded Earth, causing human beings to turn into zombies. So not only do we have alien invasion, we've got a zombie outbreak all happening at the same time. Ace meets up with a young, quote-unquote, girl named Tobio, who he immediately falls in love with and saves from a robbery. It's love at first sight, but little does he know that Tobio has a secret that could change things forever. So anyway, this movie is, you know, it's got all the classic elements of a zombie outbreak. There's some really cool zombie scenes. There's a lot of cool explosions. You've got Guitar Wolf playing music and then showing up and fighting zombies. Just crazy wall-to-wall Japanese action coming at you from all sides. A lot of good music in this movie. Besides Guitar Wolf, we've got songs by The Oblivions, Teen Generate, The Kids, Devil Dogs, Bikini Kill, Phantom Surfers. So if you like, you know, garage rock or punk rock, you're definitely going to dig the music in this movie. Being 2000 and fairly low budget, there's a lot of CGI effects rather than practical effects, which is kind of disappointing. When the zombies get shot, their heads explode in fairly cartoonish, you know, CGI fashion, which, you know, normally I'm not a huge fan of CGI, but it does kind of give the movie kind of a kitschy, cartoony feel to it, which just only adds to the cult appeal of it. But yeah, I mean, there's really nothing that I don't like about this movie. I was a big fan of the band Guitar Wolf before I saw this movie. I didn't even know this movie existed. And then it finally got a stateside release sometime in the mid-2000s, and I rented it on DVD and fell in love with it instantly. I mean, it's got, just like I said, all the elements that I love. It's got alien invasions. It's got rock and roll. It's got zombies. It's really just, you know, a good Japanese tribute to American cult culture. So it's just all around great film. But yeah, I'm really excited to find out what you guys thought of Wild Zero.
I had never seen this movie. I had heard a lot about it from a lot of people. And when we did Six String Samurai, it came up again because of Guitar Wolf and stuff. So I had pretty high expectations for this movie, and they were all met. I agree about the you know, the CGI versus practical effects, but I thought this movie was a blast, and yeah, great soundtrack, just absolute craziness pretty much all the time.
Yeah,
which I can get behind. And yeah, you know, I there's all these like super crazy Japanese movies I usually can get pretty into, you know, Versus and Machine Girl and Tokyo Gore Police and all that stuff. So this was definitely one of the earlier examples of that, and I think that it has a lot of staying power.
Yeah.
I feel like this one is definitely rewatchable, especially in a group of people, and yeah, it's just a blast.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think it's quite, I mean, don't get me wrong, this movie is pretty ridiculous on so many levels, but I don't think it's as over the top as something like Tokyo Gorblies.
Right.
And so therefore I think it makes it a little bit more, like you said, kind of classic and rewatchable. It's not just total like gore, crazy shock value. There's actually, you know, there's elements of this movie that are genuinely appealing aside from the shock side of it.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's definitely part of the staying power, I think, is that it's kind of toned down. I mean, it's not crazy by any
right,
means.
Yeah.
But you know, when you look at, if you were to watch this side by side with something like Tokyo Gore Police, this is definitely the more manageable, I would say, of the two.
Right.
If I was gonna watch one of these two movies like with my dad, I would probably watch Wild Zero.
Yeah, I never saw this movie either. I saw clips of it at a show/party daily in Dayton a long, long time ago, like 7 years ago or something. And at the time I was like, hey, it's those dudes from the Sore Losers, the Guitar Wolves. I should check out this movie one day, and just never got around to it. But this movie I thought was slightly similar in tone to the Sore Losers, which is a movie I love a lot. It's got Guitar Wolf. It's got almost the same soundtrack. And magical powers and stuff, and a lot of sci-fi stuff, spaceships going around. So those are all things that they have in common. There is a Greg Oblivion song on the soundtrack called Twice as Deep, which is one of my favorite songs ever. So I got up on my couch and started like jumping up and down when that song came on. I was super stoked. But yeah, I mean, this movie, it's pretty awesome. I feel like it should have been more awesome, like given that it's about Guitar Wolf fighting zombies and aliens. But you know, it doesn't add up to the sum of its parts. I thought, I mean, that being said, it's totally awesome. This movie rules, but it should have been better. Like if you looked at all the elements on a piece of paper, it should have came out better. I thought I hated that CGI blood that was in this movie. A lot of heads blow up and it's CGI and that really sucked real bad.
Yeah.
But I did like that the zombies who got their heads blown up were blue, like the Dawn of the Dead zombies. I thought that was a cute homage to those zombies, or perhaps a making fun of those zombies.
Yeah.
Because it's ridiculous that those zombies were blue. But in this, I like it, because everything's so wacky in this movie. But yeah, I mean, this is just super fun, and Guitar Wolf is totally awesome. They have these torches that, like, come out of their mics, so that when they sing, it looks like they're breathing fire, and that is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm a little sad that Gwai didn't think of that first. But yeah, I mean, this is totally sweet. It feels like perhaps, I mean, because this movie is like so, it's basically like the movie equivalent of a punk rock song. So I feel like it should have maybe been shorter. Like there are some scenes, like there's some parts in it where like it ebbs and flows with energy in it. I feel like maybe it should have just been balls out crazy energy the whole time. But I understand that that's probably super hard to do, especially when you're making a movie for $12 or whatever. But yeah, but I mean, it's totally awesome nonetheless.
Yeah, while I was watching this this week, I mean, I had seen this before, but having seen Sore Losers fairly recently for the show, I did have to draw a lot of comparisons, and clearly this was kind of along the same lines. I feel this might have had a little bit more continuity to it, as it was probably shot in one fell swoop, as opposed to like the Sore Losers that I feel was just like shot over the course of several weekends with various degrees of film stock and budgets.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, they do have a very similar tone to them. And I think if you're a fan of that stuff, you know, garage punk, and you like Guitar Wolf and the Oblivions and all that stuff, that you should definitely see both of these. I think this is a little bit more concise in its storyline and what it's trying to do. But yeah, I think this is just an all-around fun movie. I agree there are some parts that maybe aren't as... because, I mean, it's, you know, hard... when you've got a scene of the black leather clad Guitar Wolf, like blowing zombies' heads off with guns and swords and stuff. And then when you go into like an exposition scene, it's kind of hard to live up to that energy. But nevertheless, I think this movie is very watchable and never really boring. There are some side characters that kind of pad it out. There's this group of kind of no good nicks that are just driving around and get caught up in this whole zombie thing. There's this like weapons expert woman that shows up and wears like this kind of weird onesie, and she hips them to her stash of all kinds of crazy weaponry. So there, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. But nevertheless, the main focus and what you're going to remember about this movie is the ear-piercing Guitar Wolf performances with flames coming. And flames come out of everything in this movie, not just the mics, but the exhaust pipes of motorcycles and cars. Whatever they could put flames out of, they certainly did. But yeah, you know, it's just a fun movie. And this has one of the best posters I've seen in a long while in terms of just good old-fashioned, you know, painting style horror posters. This is a good poster that would look good on anybody's wall, so definitely check that out.
I just want to correct myself because I said Six String Samurai and I meant
Five String
Samurai. Sore Losers.
Ah, yeah.
Five String Samurai.
Yeah, this definitely, like I said, has some elements that were in Sore Losers, but I think this might be a little more polished.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, like you said, the story's a lot more concise.
Yeah.
I think I had to watch The Sore Losers like 5 times before I understood what the story was.
Right.
Which is mostly because you can't hear what they're saying half the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to the broad you mentioned with the onesie, I was like real upset. Like, if you're going to have a character that's like wearing a onesie and like these little tight hot pants, like, why not get a chick that has a nice butt? I was very upset with the casting in that situation.
Yeah. You do get to see her boobs in the shower, though.
Yeah, but she wasn't wearing hot pants on her boobs.
Touche.
Which would have been really cool, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, shortly after this movie was made, Bass Wolf of Guitar Wolf died. They have since replaced him. So if you get a chance to see Guitar Wolf live and in concert and you don't value your eardrums too much, you can check them out. They rock the house, from all accounts.
Yeah, they just played here, but I didn't go because I've never really listened to them.
Yeah, they turn it all the way up, that's for sure.
I'm sure.
Their amps do not stand a chance. All right, well, that just about wraps it up for Wild Zero from 2000. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about Bad Ronald from 1974, so stick around.
JunkFoodDinner.com is the world's oldest and sexiest website. Go to JunkFoodDinner.com for the latest episodes of the show. We also have all of our past episodes. You will also find news about the show, movie news, trailers, funny stuff, and links to our friends. You can also leave us log comments, because that makes us happy. We hope our website will be a good way for you to spend time during the downtime in life, when celebrities are not going hilariously crazy, and when the Warcraft servers are down.
I can't do it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Fucking thing sucks!
I can't believe that shit. I can't believe it's all like that. Fucking pass it over then, dude. I've been waiting all day for that Bad Ronald, man.
We're gonna light the weed, tap the cake, shoot the shit. Now let's begin. We're gonna kick right back. We're gonna sit right down.
I'm holding, but I'm about to cop some more. I'm real high, cause I smoked a lot before. So what you stopping for? Keep passing by. Smoke good weed, get a long-lasting high. I know it might be right, I know it might be wrong. And if I'm gonna have a drink, it might as well be strong. It's not the beginning and it's not the end. We gonna pass the shit around, you can hit it again. Let me be young, live life while I can. And get the wrong idea of what I actually am. Like a flash in the pan, so hold on tight. Catch a little buzz and everything will be alright.
We gonna light the weed, tap the keg, shoot the shit. Now let's begin. We gonna keep right back, we gonna sit right down. Enjoy it, girl, you gonna love the sound. We gonna light the weed, tap the keg, shoot the shit. Now let's begin. We gonna keep right back, we gonna sit right down. Enjoy it, girl, you gonna love the sound.
Now once the beer start flowing, everything gonna be fine.
Movie of the Week. Presenting the world premiere of an original motion picture produced especially for ABC. Tonight on the Movie of the Week.
Trent is a beautiful place. You see, Princess Vansetta
falls in love with Prince Norbert. Norbert's a fugitive from the land of tyrants.
You're Ronald Wilby, aren't you?
He said my name is Norbert. Now, your family's been spending too much time with the evil Duke. I want you to come with me.
Welcome back to the Junk Food Dinner. Up next, we're going to talk about Bad Ronald. This is a made-for-TV movie that came on in 1974, back when there was only one channel, and that's the way we lived, or they lived, I suppose. This is a movie that I've heard a lot about, just, you know, people whispers here and there, up until about a year ago when Adam Carolla, on his podcast, started talking about it pretty much like every episode, it seemed, talking about how much he liked this movie when it came out and how creepy it is and how it's like a gem of a cult movie. And I figured, hey, Adam Carolla is like the best human, so he's probably right about this movie. And so I've been wanting to do it on the show for a while. It was after it was on TV, it had a small VHS run, and then it went OOP for a long time, and it just found its way back into P via the Warner something archive. I have those made-to-order DVDs that are awesome. But yeah, this is a movie directed by Buzz Kulik, which kind of sounds like a fake name. And it stars Scott Jacoby as Ronald Wilby, who is sort of a nerdy kid. He lives with his mom, who is eccentric and very in love with her son, but she just loves him normally. It's not like a creepy incest thing. they're very close. But Ronald's a creep. He hits on this girl who clearly doesn't like him. People make fun of him. He spends a lot of his time studying to become a doctor and dreaming up crazy fantasy stories in his head. One day, when he's walking around, some weird trollish little girl starts making fun of Ronald and his mom, at which point Ronald grabs the kid and things become escalated and Ronald accidentally murders this kid. Seeing that her son can't go to jail because that would ruin his whole life and ruin his chances of getting into medical school, she just puts him in the walls. And that's their entire plan to get away with this crime, is for him to just hang out in the walls until things sort of smooth out. Her health is failing, though. One day she goes to the doctors for a procedure and never comes back. She dies, and Ronald is living in the walls as a new family moves in. The new family feels that maybe their house is haunted as eggs disappear from time to time and they hear sounds. But it's not haunted. It's just Bad Ronald. And that's basically the movie. It's a very short movie. I think it's only like 75 minutes long or something. So it's pretty concise. I think this movie, I'd never seen this movie until, you know, this week. But I think it's really fun. I think Bad Ronald, or just regular Ronald, is a cool character. The way he sort of devolves from nerdy eccentric into full-blown weirdo while living in these walls is fun and a bit creepy. I mean, he's, depending on your outlook, I suppose Ronald can either be, you know, the villain of the story or an anti-hero, or even, as people on IMDb have put it, just a regular hero. A lot of people apparently look up to this Bad Ronald. But I don't know. This movie I thought was pretty cool. There's a real estate agent after Ronald's mom dies. A real estate agent shows some people around in the house, and he has like the highest voice for no reason. and I thought that was very fun. But yeah, I don't know. I like this movie. How do you guys feel about it?
I had also never seen this movie before. I had heard about it quite a bit. This was actually kind of one that you would see on like if you would ever go to horror conventions, they always have the booths with the bootleg DVDs, and this was a popular bootleg DVD. I guess a lot of people had a lot of fond memories of it who saw it when it originally aired on TV back in 1974 or caught it on VHS. And I can see that for a made-for-TV movie, it definitely has a creepy vibe, and the story itself is a fairly creepy concept. I mean, just, you know, when you were a kid, you always psyched yourself out by thinking, oh, what if there's like somebody living in the attic or somebody living in the walls? So the idea of somebody moving into a house where this kid is locked, or not—he's not really trapped, but he's hiding in the walls. And the thing is, he's not really hiding in the walls. They just like seal up a bathroom in the house. You know, the original idea being he can hide in there and he can still, you know, have access to water and bathe and all this stuff. And so when this new family moves in, I found it hard to suspend disbelief long enough to assume that people moving into a house would not notice this huge patch of unused space where the bathroom used to be. I mean, that was a little suspect. Right. I mean, wouldn't you be like, well, here's this room and here's this room. We've got this huge space in between. It's probably just concrete.
Yeah, well, I feel like they even mentioned it at one point. She's like, so weird that a four-bedroom house only has one bathroom. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, I think there's even one scene where the new mom that moves into the house is looking at blueprints of the house. And I thought for sure that was going to be where they figured it out, but I guess they were just idiots. The dad of the new family that moves in is Dabney Coleman, who I love. He's been in a lot of, you know, fun movies. I mean, a lot of people my age might remember him as Mr. Drysdale from the Beverly Hillbillies movies, but, you know, he was in Tootsie and Short Time and Hot to Trot, which is another movie.
And Meet the Applegates.
Yeah, absolutely. Bad Ronald's mom is Kim Hunter, who was Dr. Zira from the Planet of the Apes movies, so... When that little girl was insulting Ronald and his mom, she forgot the most important insult, that your mama's an ape. but yeah, so it's a cool cast. And, you know, for a 1974 made-for-TV movie, it definitely has a creepy vibe to it. This is based on a book by John Vance, which apparently is a lot creepier and maybe a little darker. I think Ronald gets a little more bad in the novel. He actually, you know, actually maybe hurts some more of the people after he kind of goes nutty living inside the bathroom. So I would have liked to have seen it maybe taken a little bit farther. It seemed a little tame. But again, for a 1974 made-for-TV movie, wasn't completely unexpected. Maybe, I think I probably would have liked this movie more if it, instead of made-for-TV, it was an actual, you know, R-rated made-for-theaters movie. But nevertheless, I can see how this has a nostalgic appeal for people who caught this back in the day. I didn't hate this by any means. I thought it was an interesting story. I thought, like I said, a lot of good actors in it. I'm actually kind of interested to read the book, which unfortunately, like this movie, for a long time was out of print. Unfortunately, the book has remained out of print and is pretty impossible to get a hold of. But nevertheless, I would like to check that out and see what the original source material had to offer in terms of creepiness. But, you know, this not a terrible movie by any means, but I'm not going to run out and watch this again anytime soon.
Yeah, like both of you, I had never seen this. I actually had never even heard of this. But when you kind of laid out the description last week, I was pretty excited about it. And I definitely liked it. It is very creepy. It's got an unsettling kind of tone to it because it seems like... You know, aside from the whole looking at the blueprints part, I mean, like, this it could potentially have happened in some fashion. But I don't think Ronald was very bad at any point. Like, so I was kind of expecting it to amp up, and it never really did. And I know that it was made for 70s TV and stuff, so I think that was partially my fault for kind of expecting a little more out of it. But, yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought, yeah, you know, that when he, like, comes out and confronts... the princess and stuff, he's just in full-on creep mode. I don't know why he's so dirty at that point, since he lives in a bathroom, but there was just a lot of little things that I was just like, come on, Ronald.
Yeah, one of the main things where I was like that, there's a point in this movie where there's this snooping neighbor that's been peering in and has been kind of suspicious of the whole Ronald situation, and after the new family moves in, she sees Ronald creeping around the house looking for food, and it gives her a heart attack, and she just dies right there on the doorsteps of the house. Now, Ronald doesn't have to do anything. I mean, he didn't kill her. She just had a heart attack. But instead of, you know, just letting her have somebody find her, he picks her up and, like, drags her into this crawl space, and it's like, why even get involved? You did nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wash your face or something.
Yeah, and then putting an old lady under your floorboards is probably going to rat you out on account of old ladies, when they're dead, smell pretty bad.
Exactly.
They already smell bad, and then when they're dead...
Even worse.
Smell worse. I would say that's probably the worst thing that Bad Ronald did, was stash that old lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like everything else up to that point, he wasn't really Bad Ronald, but after that...
Yeah, more like... big mistake with terrible consequences, Ronald.
That's probably poor choice, Ronald, I think is a better name for this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be though, because whenever she would look in the window, like she would just kind of like slowly, like the top of her head would slowly rise in the frame. Like she kind of looked like that Kilroy was here drawing that everybody used to do.
Yeah, totally.
And then I liked, like, after the new family moves in and stuff, which probably takes at least a few weeks, maybe a couple of months to get everything signed over and to get everything happening, like, she's still looking in, thinking that maybe Ronald's there. Like, that's a pretty intuitive lady, or very nosy lady, one of the
two. She had it coming.
That she did. There's a part, I might be giving out a little bit of spoilers, which is odd, since we just talked about spoilers, but this movie is 80 years old, but there's a scene where Ronald is chasing a girl around, and she runs into the basement, and so he just decides, rather than chasing her in there and hurting her or whatever, he just like locks her in, and you know, from the outside and stuff. And as a person who has played The Sims, that is the best way to kill somebody, is to just take the door away from them, because they eventually just die.
True that.
I think that Bad Ronald was playing The Sims when he was locked up in that bathroom for a while.
I did like some of Ronald's artwork, though.
Yeah, some of that was cool.
He was a good Ronald when it came to art.
Good Ronald at AOL.com.
Yeah, like you guys said, like because this movie was on TV and all that back in the 20s, you know, they couldn't really get too gory or anything with it. So there's something of an anticlimax to this movie. If you don't want to hear this part, just close your ears. But Ronald just kind of falls out of the house and then is collected by the police, and that's it.
And he's just crying for his mom.
Yeah, he like
sad,
just literally. But just literally, he just falls out of the house. Nothing happens. He's not beaten up. Nothing. He just trips and then stumbles, and then the cops pick him up, and then the credits roll.
Yeah, pretty anticlimactic.
I was bummed out by that. Especially since everything up to that is like this slow burn of what's going to happen when Ronald's found out, and then it's just nothing. Nothing happens. You can unclose your ears now, by the way, podcast listeners.
How are they going to know that you said that if their ears are closed?
I signed it in sign language while I said it.
Yeah, apparently in 1992 there was a French version of this movie made, so I don't know how that would turn out. Bad Roland.
Mal Roland.
Yeah. Filthy Ronald.
Adjective Ronald.
Yeah, I see this movie described as a horror movie a lot, and like I said, that you know, they used to sell bootleg DVDs of this at horror conventions, and I think if you're going into this movie expecting a horror movie, you will probably be pretty disappointed. But if you go to it just as, you know, as looking at it as what it is, you know, just a 70s made for TV kind of drama,
drama with like elements of suspense,
right, then I think you probably won't be disappointed. Nevertheless, it is an interesting kind of curiosity to check out if you've heard anything about it or have even been the slightest bit interested in checking it out. I say check it out.
Yeah,
especially because it's, you know, it's only 75 minutes long. I think if this were any longer, I would have lost interest, but I think all the pieces fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, if this was longer, I probably would have gotten... I mean, some scenes border on boring because most of the movie is just Ronald, like, waiting and, like... getting eggs out of the refrigerator and stuff, so
he loved eggs.
That he did. So yeah, like you said, if this was much longer, I probably would have started to get terrible Ronald.
Terrible Ronald.
But yeah, so I think this movie's good, and I think everybody should check it out if they like coming up with adjectives and putting them before somebody's name.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I think we're going to take a quick break, and then we will come back and talk about the Candy Snatchers.
Some of us will.
Sometimes after watching terrible movies, like The Time Changer, Slip the Zandice, your junk food dinner hosts get the blues. They become suicidal and cry deeply all day long, like women during a Drew Barrymore movie. The only thing that can make Kevin, Mark, and Barker feel better is more fans on Facebook. Please take a moment of your time and go like Junk Food Dinner on Facebook. each time someone clicks the like button on the JFD page. It puts a smile on the faces of these movie nerds.
That looks good. That looks really good.
Well, piece by piece and nail by nail, it'll all come down someday before the fires of hell. You let me in your house. You let me in your house. You let me in your house with the hammer. Set to drop or set to stone. Did for that and bone for bone. I'm gone to set fire to your glamour. Well, it's now rock that candy shop. Rock that candy shop. Rock that candy shop. Set it on fire. Run away and watch it burn. I'm gone to set fire to your glamour.
Take it.
It started as a simple crime, the candy snatchers. For them, it was a new beginning. For her, it was the beginning of the end. Three losers who wanted to lead the good life, the candy snatchers. They'd do anything to get there. Candy snatchers. They were rough on candy. They were rougher on themselves.
Get out of my way! Get out of my way! Get out of my way!
No!
Candy snatchers. They were after a fortune in diamonds.
We cut off her ear.
And they sent her father a piece of candy in a box.
Oh my God, no!
The candy snatchers. They did things they couldn't even believe themselves.
That is sick. That is really sick. She is old enough to be your mother.
Do you know these are?
The candy snatchers. Bizarre, incredible, almost unbelievable. Ah! The candy snatchers. This is the one they're talking about.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 61. The last film of the evening is 1973's The Candy Snatchers. This is a film by Guerdon Trueblood, just to get back to talking about Trueblood, written by Brian Gindoff. The story concerns three would-be criminals, a buxom lass and her gross brother, and a maladjusted army vet who decide to kidnap a girl named Candy and hold her ransom a bunch of diamonds. They bury her alive in a hole, and the only witness to the crime is an autistic boy whose pill-popping mother doesn't pay any attention to him. During the kidnapping, there are a lot of twists and turns, some double crosses on the part of the kidnappers and the family. Now, despite the fact that we just got this email, I don't want to give too much away because Kevin was unable to check this out this week.
It's true. This is the first time ever that I wasn't able to watch one of the movies for the show. But Netflix, they did me wrong. Couldn't get me the movie in time. But I will chime in from here with witty jokes and tune in next week for my follow-up review, because this should be arriving in the mail shortly, and I will watch it. So you too, Have fun.
I first heard about this movie in Cinema Sewer. I read the review of it in there, and I knew that I had to see it. So this was only a year or so ago that I actually saw this. But I really liked it. I love kidnapping movies, you know, or kidnapping stories gone awry. And this one had some pretty different takes on it. So I thought that was really cool. I thought the cast was pretty excellent. Everybody's kind of a total slime ball in this, which is kind of what, you know, I would expect out of kidnappers trying to get diamonds. But yeah, and then the end of this movie, without giving it away, is one of the craziest endings to a movie of this ilk that I have seen, and I think that really kind of sealed the deal. So I guess Parker, what did you think of the Candy Snatchers?
Like you said, this ending is awesome. Like, if the first, you know, 90% of this movie was just like a screensaver of fish, and then this ending happened, I'd be like, this movie is great. What a good movie. But yeah, I'd never heard of this. I didn't know what to think of it when I got it. It's a movie from the 70s about kidnapping. That's not really my wheelhouse, but totally awesome. I like this movie. All the characters are craziness. There's a lot of cool, like, stylized things. Like, somebody gets slapped and their head goes against the wall, but it's like the camera's from underneath them, and like really cool shots like that. At one point, somebody's given a gun, and it's from like underneath the gun, like looking up, and it's like really cool stylized shots take place here and there in the movie that I liked a lot. Oh, in the first, this is what, episode 61, like the first 59 episodes of the show, I don't think I ever talked about, like, you know, quality of the picture in any of the movies we've seen, because that doesn't really matter too much to me. Growing up and watching scrambled cable as a kid, like, I don't care what stuff looks like. But last week, it really was a detriment when we were watching Surf 2 that the quality was bad when we watched it. And in this, like, this looks so beautiful, this DVD. It's, like, so good looking.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, like, I expected, all right, a 70s movie that, you know, like a lesser known 70s exploitation movie, this will probably be pretty bad quality and everything like that. But it looks so good. And that, I think, really helped out when watching it, at least to me. I liked it. But yeah, this movie's great. The little kid in this, I know we talk about this a lot, but this little kid was not very annoying. He knew when to keep his goddamn mouth shut. And I like that about him. He didn't have an annoying voice like every other kid we talk about on this show.
Yeah, which is, also, I mean, even more surprising because he was disabled. And you think that, you know, it might be harder to make a disabled character less annoying than, say, a normal kid like in Six String Samurai, who was the most annoying.
Yeah, yeah. Usually in movies like these, the disabled kids are more annoying, like the kid from the third Freddy movie who was in the wheelchair. He's all, oh, yeah, my legs don't work, and I'm the dungeon master, and, you know. So this kid didn't have any of that attitude. He was a real confident fellow. Wasn't down on himself at all. The scene where he tries to call the police but instead gets a delicatessen owner is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny. I forget exactly.
There's just a lot of, like, little things in this like that, you know, where, you know, like, this kid obviously wants to do the right thing, and he just can't, and, you know, his mom's not listening, and just a lot of, like, a lot of times during the movie I would find myself being like, no, like, it could have worked out.
yeah, totally. Yeah, the kid was always, like, 2 seconds away from solving
saving
everything.
The day. Yeah.
Yeah. The scene where the kidnappers, like, go to find, like, I think he's, like, the cable guy or something, and they go to beat him up, and they fail miserably. That's, like, one of my favorite things that happens and stuff. Like, anytime you, like, if you're hanging out with, like, your caper buddy, and you're like, all right, we're going to beat this guy up, and we're going to take his outfit, and then you fail, I fucking love that. There's nothing, funnier than that gag. So I enjoyed that scene. The beginning scene in this is so cool. Like, there's this really, like, happy, cheery sort of a Last House on the Left or Cabin Fever, like, happy 70s song that plays over, you know, the video of them kidnapping a little girl. And I think that's really cool. It's a cool juxtaposition. But yeah, this movie is great. I'm sad for Kevin that he didn't get it on time because it's pretty good.
Yeah. I also, and this is in the trailer, but I really like that shot just, like, straight on the front of the van where it's just them in, like, the Groucho glasses.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love that. Yeah, just a lot of really cool stuff going on in this movie, and I'm surprised that it's not more championed, because I love this. And I kind of, like, this was one that I kind of sat on for a while to do on the show, but then it was when I was feeling like I wasn't pulling my weight, I was like, all right, fine, just Candy Snatchers. And then Kevin didn't even get to watch it, so my experiment kind of failed. But hopefully you get to see it, I don't know, tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, I will. By the time you actually hear this episode, I will have probably received and watched this movie. And I am looking forward to seeing it. A couple reasons. One, Guerdon Trueblood. It might be one of the coolest names I've ever heard in my life.
That's true.
And yeah. He directed this movie. Unfortunately, he also did write Jaws 3D, which is the worst Jaws movie.
That's true, too. He also, Brian Gindoff wrote the story for Losing It, which I know you like.
I don't know that.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's from the 80s. It's about, what's his name? Trying to lose his virginity. Tom Cruise.
Hmm.
Jackie Earle Haley's in it.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. Another thing that is intriguing me about this movie is it's got Susan Sennett, who was Graham Nash's girlfriend at the time. But she was also Billie Jean in Big Bad Mama, which is a movie I like quite a bit. And apparently she plays the titular Candy in this. But even more intriguing, we've got Tiffany Bolin as one of the kidnappers in this movie. Now, she's kind of like a 70s...
She's a sex pod.
B-movie queen in her own right. She was in Bonnie's Kids, which is cool. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Mm-hmm. She's also in Kingdom of the Spiders, which I love. And speaking of spiders, and most importantly, she was Spider Lady and Electro Woman and Dyna Girl, which... I love, and that might be one of my favorite episodes of that show. So, I am, along with your guys' glowing endorsement of it, I'm really pumped to watch this. So I'll let you guys know what I think of it next time.
I think you'll be super into it.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And again, sorry for not giving away the ending.
Yeah.
But I think if you're going to watch, I think you should watch actually all three movies from this show.
Sweet.
If you haven't. Yeah. If you haven't seen any of them. They were all pretty great.
You specifically, Kevin, you should watch all three of these movies.
Well, I already watched two of them.
Watch them all.
I think, you got to start over.
Yeah.
Shit.
Sorry.
Damn it.
Also, one thing that I learned from this movie is that if you find out that a kid is mute, laugh in his fucking face for a long time. Because that's what happens in this movie, and that scene is delightful.
Cool.
That's what I've learned. That's what I'm taking away. That's what I've learned just this week in general, I guess. It's a crossover reference.
Yeah, life lessons, crossover references this week on episode 61 of Drunk at Dinner. I think that about wraps it up for the Candy Snatchers, as well as episode 61 of Junk Food Dinner. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to bury you in a hole.
Did you know that there are two ways to help out Junk Food Dinner? The first way involves sacrificing a goat or a human baby on an altar made of dragon bones. Or, next time you're on iTunes, you can leave us a 5-star review. You can write the comment that says everyone should listen to Junk Food Dinner. You can add as many exclamation points as you want. This will help more people find the show on iTunes. Recording each episode of Junk Food Dinner is the most physically and emotionally taxing activity known to man. It leaves us exhausted and bloody after the show. The least you can do is give us a good review.
Well, that just about wraps it up for episode number 61 of Junk Food Dinner. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. Make sure you tune in next week. We're going to be taking a look at 10th Victim from 1965, Girlfriend from Hell from 1989, and Drive Angry from 2011. So that should be a really fun show, so make sure you tune in for that. If you'd like to find us, you can find us always on junkfooddinner.com. There you can find a complete listing of past episodes. You can listen to them directly on the website or download them for listening later. Also, you can find links to subscribe to us on iTunes. Just click the link right there in the corner, and it'll take you right to our iTunes page. You can subscribe to us and have the podcast delivered to your iTunes automatically every week, so you will never be without your junk food dinner. Also, you can find links to all of our friends and various pieces of nerd news that don't make it to the show, links to find us on Facebook and Twitter, just all kinds of good stuff. It really is the only website you ever need to go to.
And follow us on Twitter. We only have like 150 followers. That's for old ladies. So
you sound like a cult leader trying to get more followers.
Yeah, we need more followers to to join us and then walk into the pyre of fire.
Yeah. David Koresh had more followers than this.
Yeah. That guy didn't even know about Wild Zero.
But if you'd like to be one of our many followers and get in contact with us, send us an email at jftpodcast@gmail.com or let your voice be heard and give us a call on our voicemail line at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. All right, so until next time, this is Kevin Moss, Mark Fredo, and Parker Bowman for Junk Food Dinner saying adios, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Calm down, baby. You're just being kidnapped.